President Trump said he gave Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe a big hug when Abe arrived for a meeting at the White House this morning. The president said he just couldn't help it. And the two men just wrapped up a joint news conference in which they verbally hugged each other. Here's Prime Minister Abe through a translator.
Donald, President, you are excellent businessmen, but you have never been in the Congress or being a governor. You have not experienced being in the public office, but you have fought the uphill struggle and fight for more than a year in the election campaign to become a new president. And this is the dynamism of democracy.
The dynamism of democracy. Well, those remarks came at the end of a very busy week. In the seat of democracy, Washington, D.C., President Trump's counselor, Kellyanne Conway, told people to buy Ivanka Trump's stuff. Now she's being counseled. And Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz says he will refer her for an ethics investigation. But he was excoriated by voters in Utah who asked why he hasn't investigated Donald Trump's finances.
And then you've got this tweet today from President Trump who called last night's appeals court decision against his travel bans disgraceful. So let's bring in our politics roundtable. Enrique Acevedo is Univision news anchor and correspondent who's reporting from Washington, D.C. for the first 100 days of the Trump administration. Hi, Enrique.
Hey, Peter.
And Rick Klein, ABC News political director. Hey, Rick.
Great to be with you.
Right. So, look, it didn't seem like President Trump wanted to go there during this press conference, but right out of the gate, he was asked several questions about the court ruling last night that upheld the ban on his travel ban. Here he is.
So we'll be doing something very rapidly having to do with additional security for our country. You'll be seeing that sometime next week. In addition, we will continue to go through the court process, and ultimately, I have no doubt that we'll win that particular case.
Rick, how do you interpret that? Because a lot of legal scholars are saying the administration made some mistakes by rushing this travel ban through. Some have said he should just rewrite the order to make it work. And it sounds like as of today, that actually may still be on the table.
I view that as a two-track strategy, a plan and a backup plan. The plan being to continue to keep this fight in courts, but keep in mind that key provisions of the order, even if it was upheld, would expire after 90 days. The clock is ticking on that. So the additional steps that they're saying will come in the coming week, I think, will be key, and that might be the chance for them to craft that backup plan and to tone down some of the language and some of the specifics in an order and find something that they think might have a better chance of passing legal muster.
Now, I want to ask you both.
You make a really good point,
go ahead,
Peter, because you think they would have learned their lesson on doing things very rapidly after what happened. And we'll see if there are some adjustments to the most controversial aspects of this executive order. But that means admitting mistakes, and this is not an administration, and it wasn't a campaign prone to do that.
Well, I want to ask you both, just before we move on to the so many events of this past week, about, you know, what we just saw, this the two leaders standing and making comments and then taking questions. You know, what did you hear there? Enrique, start with you. We heard President Trump saying, we're going to have additional security for our country. You'll be seeing that sometime next week. Both of the leaders talked about how security was so important to them, but you could hear Abe also saying, I want my country to be able to build great things for your country. And the backdrop of that, of course, is that Donald Trump has said he wants America first, you know, American builders first. So what did you hear in this meeting of these two world leaders?
I think both leaders were also talking to China during this joint press conference. It's in their best interest, both Japan and the United States, that China gets the message in terms of what they want to do in security, the trade relationship that Japan and the U.S. have. So I think there was a lot of that. They were not only talking to the audience at the White House and people listening, but also to the Chinese government.
Free use of the seas. They were, you know, free travel on the seas. Rick Klein?
There are obviously very tense and interesting conversations going on behind the scenes about security arrangements and a lot of pressure that Donald Trump is putting on the Japanese to increase their investment in security. I think all of that will be developed over time, and this meeting may be the first of that. I am struck by how the two leaders are trying to show this degree of mutual respect right now, and it is a tense time with a lot of the world trying to figure out what President Trump is really all about.
Well, Rick, there is so much to talk about. We're just 3 weeks into this administration. We've also got this news out today about National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and some reporting showing that he had privately discussed lifting Russian sanctions with the Russian ambassador before the Trump administration took office. Now, this brings Vice President Mike Pence into the fray because he had defended Michael Flynn at some point. This is an awkward situation for him, to say the least. How serious are these? Is this reporting?
And many tentacles to this story. And you start with the fact that it's illegal under a two-century-old federal law that's rarely been enforced for anyone to negotiate with a foreign power unless they're explicitly given that right. You don't have two presidents at a time is the gist of it. And right now it looks as if General Flynn, in his position in the transition, was negotiating some kind of a deal or discussing the possibility of that. And that would stand – this brings us to the second big tentacle here, because that would stand at odds from the public posture – which would mean that it's possible that General Flynn was misleading Vice President Pence, White House officials, about the nature of those conversations, because they went out to bat for him and said that it wasn't the way it had been described. So I'm really interested to see how this breaks down. Donald Trump was not asked about it at the news conference this afternoon, but it's going to be a critical question. Do you side with your vice president? Do you side with your national security advisor? And what do you think about the idea that he may have been misleading people about these conversations?
Yeah,
and adding to Rick's point, this also goes against the one president at a time tradition, and it undercuts American foreign policy and American credibility around the world. We have to revisit how Putin decided not to retaliate to the sanctions imposed by the Obama administration, something that then-President-elect Trump applauded publicly.
Yeah. I want to move on to another topic that we reported on yesterday, a poignant story, many would say, about the mother who came to Arizona illegally when she was 14, and she was working in a company. She was rounded up, and it was seen that she had a false Social Security number that she'd used to get that job. But under relatively new at the time Obama administration policy, she was allowed to stay as long as she checked in with the ICE, the immigration officials, every 6 months or so. And she was doing that yesterday when she was detained. Huge protest. She was taken away in a van. And I'm not sure, you know, people thought that she would really be deported. But Enrique, she was sent back to Mexico. Your thoughts on that story?
Well, I think it has to do with a larger narrative of border security. And people need to recognize that the largest factor driving undocumented immigration into the U.S. is not a weak, unprotected border. The border wall is the most expensive, the least effective measure to combat undocumented immigration. And deportations are also the least humane, least effective way to address our immigration crisis. I think we have to look at this from another perspective. Is this mother, Guadalupe Garcia, a threat to our national security, to the well-being of her community? Or now that two young U.S. citizens are left without a mother, is that a problem for society?
These are her teenagers. And we should say today, Mexico warned its citizens living in the U.S. to take precautions.
Yeah, and Rick, I want to direct this to you and make the point that I think is very important, because I've spent much of my career and most of my life living along the border. This is exactly what people were hoping Donald Trump would do. It's a big reason why he's in the White House. There was they're calling this woman the first casualty in the shift of administrations, and yet many people would celebrate that.
Well, I think this is a critical point, because for Donald Trump and the way he has cast the border wall as well as the travel ban, it is all about security. And I think he mixes the storylines and talks about the urgent threat. And I think Enrique is very much right in pointing out this is not what people had in mind. But border security, border wall, yes, they did vote for that. Travel ban, yes, they did vote for that. And I think a lot of the outrage that's been aimed at Donald Trump has been in areas where, frankly, he's been making good on campaign promises, which leads to the kind of organizing energy that you referenced, what happened to Jason Chaffetz at the town hall. That's the backlash, because people are legitimately upset, rightfully upset, about what they see happening when Donald Trump is doing what he said he would do.
Well, let's listen to a little of what happened to Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz. He was at a town hall in his home state of Utah last night. Hundreds of people chanting this. Now, I said earlier today that these were not necessarily his supporters, but they were part of an across-the-country protest movement. And I have been hearing from people in Utah saying, no, these we are his constituents. Many of us who were there are his constituents, and we want him to do his job as House Oversight Committee Chair and investigate Donald Trump's conflicts of interest. Enrique, you take that.
Well, I think it's also bringing more people into the political process. And it's bringing more people into the political process by protesting and being part of this so-called resistance. I think that public pressure is probably the most effective angle on that resistance, because Democrats don't have the numbers to really oppose Republicans in Congress. And this kind of public pressure would, I think, ultimately lead to some results.
Mm-hmm. Rick, you get the last word. Will it work?
I think the energy is unusual, and it is potent. And we saw it work for Republicans in the Tea Party era. It's not clear where this ends up going, but they are being heard. Yeah. And I think the scenes that we're seeing play out across the country will continue at town hall meetings throughout the month of February and beyond. It's real. The energy is out there, and there's something to be done with it.
All right. We'll keep an eye on it. Rick Klein, ABC News political director, and Enrique Acevedo, Univision news anchor and correspondent. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.